This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
It's important we look at the facts.
Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
Because I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.
Hello and welcome to another Planet Holyrood. I'm Paul Hutchin, political editor of the Daily Record. Joining me this week are Hannah Roger, the chief reporter of the Sunday Mail, and Douglas Dickey of the Scottish Daily Express. So another week, another round of terrible headlines for the new First Minister, Humza Yousaf. Everywhere he turns, he seems to face questions about the police investigation into SNP finances. There's been no honeymoon for Humza. The big story this week was, of course, the arrest of long-standing SNP treasurer Colin Beattie, who was later released without charge. And the same thing happened to Peter Murrell, the former chief executive of the party. So let's start with the police investigation. Hannah, the Sunday Mail has done some sterling work on this story. You and John Ferguson have rightly won plaudits for your reporting on this. What was your reaction to the Beattie arrest, and where do you think the police investigation goes from here?
Well, you know, I think the fact that Peter Murrell was arrested and questioned, I think that anyone who's been paying attention to it and who knows the sort of structure of the SNP internally wouldn't have been that surprised, me included, that Colin Beattie would be, you know, part of that investigation as well. I think the fact that the police went so far as to say that he had been arrested and was being questioned as a suspect in their investigation, you know, it's one of these ones that's quite difficult because we're in this limbo phase where we can speak about it, but we can't, you know, we don't have a huge amount of information. So there's a lot of kind of blanks to fill in. But in answer to your original question, I'm not that surprised about Colin Beattie's arrest. I think where the investigation goes next, well, you know, I think most people now are looking at the third person whose name is on those company accounts, and that is Nicola Sturgeon. You know, the fact that we hadn't heard anything in terms of her being questioned by the police up until this point, I think the longer that takes to happen, the more people are, you know, asking questions about why are they taking so long to even question Nicola Sturgeon. So potentially we could see some movement around Nicola Sturgeon because, as I say, Peter Murrell, he's been arrested and questioned. His name is on the accounts, Colin Beattie the same, and she is the final person whose name is on those accounts too. So, yeah, we just have to keep an eye out and see what's going to happen.
Hannah, the First Minister, or the former First Minister's resignation press conference, she said that the police investigation played no part in her deciding to quit. Do you buy that in the cold light of day? I mean, I'm not convinced that they were tipped off, but do you think that the former First Minister maybe had an inkling that something bad was coming down the track?
Well, yeah, I don't want to kind of verge into the realm of conspiracy or whatever, you know, in terms of the police being in cahoots with the SNP. I don't have a clue about any of that, but I think now even, you know, even SNP members, SNP supporters that I've been speaking to are rightly, I think, suspicious of Nicola Sturgeon's true reasons for her resignation. I just think it's too much of a coincidence that she resigned, you know, a couple of weeks before this happened, given that she had been previously saying, you know, oh, I've got plenty left in the tank, I'm not going anywhere. You know, everyone was sort of questioning at the time, really, like, what has caused this? Why is it that she has suddenly decided all of this? And, you know, I think it does put it into a different perspective when we now, knowing what we know now. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't like to say that she was telling fibs, but I don't buy that the police investigation was nothing to do with it.
Dougie, Hamza's had a very difficult start in his term as First Minister. He can get on the front foot. Every time he wants to talk about his own agenda, something else happens with this police investigation. Now, the Scottish Daily Express is not exactly the First Minister's biggest fan. Are you beginning to feel a wee bit sorry for the guy?
You know, fun enough, Paul, just before I came on to the show, we were discussing this very point. And I think it's fair to say there's not too much sympathy, certainly amongst Scottish Daily Express readers. And, you know, my own view is that, you know, Hamza Youssef was part of Nicola Sturgeon's team. He was a close member of Nicola Sturgeon's team. I find it very hard to believe that he didn't know some of what she knew. And you know, Hannah's made the point about whether she had an inkling of what was coming. And of course, we've got to be, you know, careful of what we say. But I don't believe for a second that Hamza Youssef didn't have an idea that something like this was going to happen. I think he is arrogant enough to believe that he could deal with it, that he could get the party back on the front foot. And I think, once again, we're seeing a guy who looks increasingly out of his depth. I think a lot of us thought that would be the case before he was elected. He actually looked shattered. Completely bereft. He actually had you know, a rare change in luck today. I thought he got a very, very easy ride at FMQs today. I nearly nodded off at times during it. It was that dull. But other than that, it's been a dreadful week for him. And the optics of it are just, you know, I think something to kind of point out is that if, you know, I was speaking to someone close to this at the weekend, and they were quite clear that if charges are brought, you know, this could be years, you know, years before a resolution comes to this. So the SNP could have 2 or 3 years of this right up until the next Scottish election of, you know, potentially court cases. And again, I don't want to, you know, preempt anything that might happen, but I think he looks like a guy who thought he could deal with it and is finding it very quickly that actually he's not in control of the narrative. He's not able to get control of the narrative, and he's looking increasingly like a bit of a lame duck.
Do you know, I was just going to say, right, I was watching earlier this week, I was watching Aliens, you know, the sequel to Alien, right? And it just reminds me of Hamza's a bit like Ripley in Aliens, where she's just trying to get through, sort out all the mess, get to the other side, and just aliens, like, they're just everywhere, completely relentless. I feel like that's Hamza right now. Like, he can't do anything right. He's just being attacked left, right, and centre. So, yeah.
Good analogy. I like it, yeah.
Yeah, it's been on my mind since I watched it, and I just keep seeing parallels everywhere. But I do feel like this is quite a good one because, you know, he just isn't getting a break at all, you know. But what Dougie was saying, I think there are questions for him in terms of how much he was aware of and how much involvement he's had. And, you know, I don't believe that he didn't have a clue about anything until he became First Minister. I just, that kind of stinks to me.
I'm looking forward to seeing Nicola Sturgeon bust through his chest at FMQs one day. Take on.
I think maybe the analogy I would draw is it's like Jaws, and I think that the police investigation is the shark. That's the metaphor for me. Now, Hannah, the main thing that he wanted to be the centerpiece of his week was the priorities statement. I think on the Tuesday, and that was completely overshadowed by to say the least. Now, if you look at the sort of policy side of it, he delayed the deposit return scheme, kind of got rid of the consultation on alcohol advertising, and then confirmed another delay in the National Care Service. Do you think there are signs that he's trying to distance himself from the Sturgeon administration? Because those were three pretty key policies that she was right behind.
Well, yes and no, to be honest, because if we look at it, it's not like he scrapped deposit return. It's not like he scrapped the National Care Service. He's just put it on pause. So, you know, I think those are probably the right things to do, is particularly around the deposit return scheme. I've been doing an awful lot of work on that in the past kind of like 6 weeks or so, and there are huge, huge problems with it. So I think that's probably the right idea. But, you know, so I do think maybe he is trying to appear like he's distancing himself from the Sturgeon regime. But when you actually look at the details, it is not distant enough, I would say. And of course, he did, unfortunately, kind of pitch himself, even though he wouldn't admit it, pitch himself as the continuity candidate in the leadership election. And I'm pretty sure he's, you know, kicking himself for doing that now.
Do you think, Dougie, I mean, some folk think that he has to throw Nicola under the bus. Do you think that he has to throw her under the motorhome?
I'm actually, we've been quite surprised that he's not thrown Nicola Sturgeon under the bus yet, actually. I don't really feel he has. I understand, obviously, Tuesday was an attempt maybe to distance himself from Sturgeon's, you know, some of her policies. Policies, incidentally, that Humza Yousaf himself was happy to defend just a few weeks ago. But I think I actually think he's shown remarkable loyalty to Nicola Sturgeon in some ways. Not that I'm, you know, one for giving him much praise, but I think it'd been very easy for him to, you know, completely turn away from everything that, you know, Nicola Sturgeon felt she stood for. But so far, he's kind of resisted the chance to do that. Whether he does it in the future, that, you know, that kind of remains to be seen. I think Hannah was correct. You know, doing the delays to the DRS and the alcohol advertising were absolutely the right things to do. The most interesting thing about the whole thing is that the Greens, you know, the Greens in government, their red line wasn't actually an environmental issue, and he certainly threw Lorna Slater under the bus on Tuesday. So sorry, you're going to forgive me. There's a dog trying to get in my house. but yeah, I mean, he totally humiliated Lorna Slater, and but probably, you know, probably for the correct reasons.
Hannah, let's move on from the SNP to bad Tories. Lord Frost wrote a piece in the Daily Telegraph this morning in which he basically said that a future Tory government should claw back powers from the Scottish Parliament. Does this unelected backbench peer have a point?
I mean, who knows? He did. It's obviously like completely incendiary. He's just lobbed a grenade right in there because he's thought, oh, the SNP are in trouble. You know, they don't have a clue what they're doing. So let's just take all of their powers off of them. Devolution isn't working. I mean, he's even slagged off the Welsh government and said, you know, they've you know, made a pathetic attempt at devolution and it's not really worked there either, but he's actually said that in Scotland it's become very dangerous, and that's why he thinks that you know, basically the next Tory government should remove all of the devolved powers. One of the things though I did find was quite interesting in that column, He says that, you know, the Internal Markets Act that was brought in under Boris, when was it, 2021, you know, he is directly linking that to basically this attempt to remove, like, powers of devolved governments. Now, that's something that the SNP at the time constantly said, you know, this is a Tory power grab, this is a power grab from us, how dare you? And the Tories said, no, absolutely not. So it's quite interesting to see somebody so senior and influential within the Tory party basically admit that that's what it's for. But, yeah.
Who is this guy? And why should we give a monkey's what he thinks? He's never been elected.
He's unelected, right? But he's, he was, like, crucial in the Brexit kind of negotiations. I spoke to him many times, actually, during that period. He does have his sort of finger on the pulse, I guess, of what's going on within the Tory party. He's a kind of, or at least he was anyway, an ally of Boris Johnson. So he kind of comes from that side of things. But it's not as if he is saying, right, this is what the Tories are going to do. He's just a mouthpiece like any other columnist, you know. He's entitled to have his opinions, and I suppose it's useful to know what the opinions of that certain faction of the Tory party, the kind of things that they're talking about and the kind of things that they're discussing. But no, it's not. He doesn't have any, you know, doesn't have any kind of political or elected power, but it doesn't mean he can't have an opinion.
Dougie, what I thought was interesting was Scottish Tories lining up to denounce what he was saying. I think it was Murdo Fraser started it off, and then you had Donald Cameron and various other people. It'd be fair to say this is a deeply unhelpful intervention for the Scottish Conservatives.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Paul. I can agree with, you know, somewhat Hannah was saying. I mean, Lord Frost, I don't know if he's quite as influential as people maybe think, especially not now. What I do think is he's saying something that I think, you know, not the idea of there not being a Scottish Parliament, I don't think is in anyone's radar. But I think there is a growing line of thought in Scotland that it maybe does need to be reformed. I've seen quite a few people talking about this, and their point that, you know, people say that Westminster is removed or feels distant from them, but Holyrood can feel extremely distant from people, especially in the northeast, the Highlands and Islands. The same kind of problems arise here. So I think it's kind of part of a wider argument over whether Holyrood itself needs to be looked at.
An argument, maybe, Dougie, for devolving more powers to councils and local communities rather than taking them back up to Westminster?
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, on a kind of personal level, I'm certainly something I'm supportive of. I think Holyrood is every bit as bad at hoarding power as Westminster perceives itself to be. But I mean, it has been, you know, to go back to the original question, it's been a deeply unhelpful comment, I think, from a Scottish Tory point of view. I think there's a lot of Scottish Daily Express readers will have some sympathy with them. They might even think it should go a wee bit further. But obviously the SNP, who, of course, also want to get rid of devolution in their own way, have jumped on it. They've kind of pounced on it. I don't think it's going to happen. I think the last thing the UK government needs is to have to deal with certain issues up here. They've got their own, you know, they don't have their own problems to deal with. The last thing they need is, you know, the Scottish NHS landing on their entry. So I think it is, it certainly created debate. We're running a wee poll on it on our website. It'd be great if people could take part in that, engage what people think. But it's one of these, for me, Lord Frost, he's talking to a certain type of Conservative voter through the Telegraph. I don't think it's going to have any mainstream support. It's an interesting talker. the SNP will obviously pounce on it, anything to take away from their own problems. But I think in a week's time, it will be chip paper, as they say.
Anna, last year, Douglas Ross looked like he was in trouble. You know, the flip-flopping over Boris Johnson and undeclared declarations on his register of interest. But now, maybe just by dint of SNP problems and crisis, he seems to be safe. Is that your reading of it?
Well, in his position as the leader?
Yeah, as Scottish Tory leader.
I mean, yeah, I don't see any sort of, you know, major, anyone launching any major challenges to his position at the minute. No, I think that would be kind of pretty stupid on the part of the Scottish Tories, given, you know, they don't want to start creating havoc in their own party when, I guess, they, you know, could benefit from the chaos in the SNP. But yeah, he's also sort of been getting on all right in terms of making some fairly good points at FMQs. He's not been, you know, he's not been saying anything totally ridiculous. So yeah, I think he's fine for now.
Yeah. Just on the opinion polls, I suppose it was the legacy of Liz Truss that Labour had massive opinion poll leads, maybe even up to 25 points at one point. Now it seems to have narrowed to about 10 points or less. What do you make of this, Hannah? I mean, is that just a sort of natural process, given that, you know, that the 25-point lead was probably based on anger and was always going to reduce somewhat?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the 25-point lead, when are we talking about? Are we talking about, you know,
like last year, I think, you know.
Okay, so Partygate and the crony contract, and, you know, people are still absolutely reeling and traumatised from COVID, and then they hear about all these parties and all the rest of it. So, yeah, it's unsurprising that there was such a huge lead at that point. I think, you know, what does that tell us about people's views just now? I think it tells us that Rishi Sunak's managing as best he can. He's obviously not totally wowing people, but he's not doing anything, you know, completely horrific to make them so angry that they want to go to Labour. You know, I think Keir Starmer might be a bit, sorry, I've got a cat here. It's not just kind of random. I think Keir Starmer might be a bit disappointed in that. I think that he would probably want to see more of a, you know, more of a difference there. But then obviously that might be why he has accused Rishi Sunak of basically supporting paedophiles, which is another mental thing last week. But yeah, so we might start to see more of these sorts of headline-grabbing, sensationalist things coming from the Labour Party in the next year to try and, you know, push the difference in those opinion polls a bit further.
Anna, do you think that maybe the opinion poll lead was based more on anger at the Tories than it was about enthusiasm for Labour?
Well, I mean, no doubt. Unfortunately, you know, Labour under Jeremy Corbyn, I mean, we talk about this all the time, but obviously that was just a disaster. And Keir Starmer was starting from a very, like, low point, so he did have, like, quite a lot of ground to make up. But, you know, he's doing a good job, but I don't think people have got this real... It's kind of like Rishi Sunak. They've not got this real affinity towards him like they did with, for example, Corbyn in the beginning, or Boris even, or, you know, Nicola Sturgeon, for example. And I think that, yeah, people were just so infuriated by Boris and the goings-on of Partygate and the crony COVID contracts and Matt Hancock, and, you know, the list is endless. I think that's probably why there was such a big sort of gap there.
Dougie, do you sense that Labour's lead is soft?
Yeah, I think I absolutely do. And Hannah, for me, has hit the nail on the head. It's kind of, we're coming, hopefully we're coming out of this kind of cult of politicians, because I think, you know, it's something that Rishi Sunak, who has only had to appear competent, and I think Hannah, I was kind of chuckling at your assertion that a politician was doing well because he hadn't said anything completely ridiculous. And I think that's, you know, that is the kind of bar that we're setting these days for our politicians, and I guess that's quite depressing. But yeah, you know, Rishi Sunak has shown himself to be a competent leader, and I think people are responding to that. Labour's biggest problem, and I think this is actually more of a problem in Scotland than it is down south, is right now people are, you know, they are defining themselves and people are defining them as what they're not rather than what they are. I think that's going to be a big problem for Keir Starmer, because you know what will happen is when people actually scratch the surface and as that anger fades, then you know they actually need to offer something to the country, and I'm not sure they do that at the moment. I mean, Humza Yousaf's his policy announcement on Tuesday, which was obviously completely overshadowed, was also clearly an attempt to try and stop voters hemorrhaging to Labour. It was obviously pitched at the central belt Labour, you know, traditional socialist types, and you know he's able to have put that on the table, and yet Anas Sarwar doesn't seem to be able to offer what Labour, you know, to tell what Labour offer. All we can kind of say is, well, you know, we're not the SNP, we're not the Tories. Let's get them both out. But then what happens after that? And I think right now that's Labour's biggest problem. And the Tories and the SNP could yet take.
Do you really think that Labour hasn't given any offers of what they would do? I mean, I would say the opposite, actually. I think that they've, you know, not only are they slagging everybody else off left, right and centre, but they're actually saying, well, if we were in charge, this is what we would do, you know, for example, to solve the NHS recruitment problems or, you know, various other things like energy bill prices and stuff. I think they have put forward quite a few sort of well-rounded proposals, no?
I actually think down south they have done better at that. I'm not sure it's getting through. I think that's the point I'm making.
Okay.
You know, right now it's very much, let's get rid of the SNP, let's get rid of the Tories. They need to offer something else. You obviously feel differently. I don't think they are offering anything else right now. Obviously, Scott, you know, the Express, you know, our kind of leadership are probably looking more at what the Tories and Rishi Sunak can offer. But I think it is a soft lead. But I also think it's still a pretty healthy lead, albeit quite far out still from the general election. A lot can change in a year, or, you know, over a year, 18 months. And but the idea that they were going to win by 25%, you know, the Tories were going to end up in third place, it was always pie in the sky. This was always going to happen. The polls were always narrow. I really hate to use a cliche, but there's only one poll that matters. And I still think if I was a betting man, which I am occasionally, I think my money would still be on a Labour victory, but maybe not a Labour majority.
Yeah, I think that's quite a shrewd analysis, Dougie. Just summing up then, good week, bad week, starting with you, Hannah.
My good week was going to be Angela Rayner, because she gave an absolutely stonking speech at the STUC conference on Tuesday. But, well, I still think that she's had a really good week. Basically, she's came up here, she's been sort of well-received, she got some good coverage in the papers, and, you know, she spoke a lot of sense. I think it's been quite a good week for her. But can I also add, because I like to add someone else, Fergus Ewing. I think he has had quite a
come on. Week.
No, just bear with me, right? He's totally chuffed about this deposit return scheme, and he made quite a funny comment about the Greens during FMQs that made me laugh. So
didn't he say that to the Sunday Mail though a couple of weeks ago?
Say wine bar revolutionaries.
Or maybe, I think he said it to the Daily Mail. I think he said it to one of the papers.
Well, that's fine. I just thought, you know.
He repeated a funny phrase. Okay, fair enough.
Oh, fine. Take Fergus Ewing off of me then. Do you want bad week from me?
Bad week. Who's in the doghouse?
Well, I think me and Doogie have both avoided the obvious, which is Hamza and Colin Beattie. but for
it's
me,
it's not Colin's best week. Let's
it's not been Colin's.
I think that goes without saying. I don't think we need to pick that out, to be honest.
But Lorna Slater, she is not. Sorry, that picture. Lorna Slater is probably feels like that image right now in her head. You know, her amazing deposit return scheme that she said was going ahead with, you know, no questions asked on August the 16th has been, you know, delayed. And she also, I'm pretty sure she also said previously, whoever delays, if anyone delays the scheme, they're incompetent. And yeah, so she's, I think she's actually due to make a statement in Holyrood kind of imminently about it as well. But, you know, it's not been the best week for Lorna Slater.
And Dougie, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Staying on that theme, it's been a good week for Scotland's and the UK's craft brewers and other small drinks producers and businesses who are obviously, you know, cracking open a beer to celebrate the delay of the, you know, much-derided deposit return scheme. They might, you know, it is just a delay. We need to wait and see what happens with it. I suspect, and I would like to think, that they might be having another celebratory drink when Lorna Slater is removed from government, as she should be in the near future, especially after calling her new boss incompetent. it's been a very good week for them. It's been a bad week for Humza Yousaf's press officers, who have had to watch on, I can only assume, with head in their hands as new First Minister just pours petrol on the fire with some fantastic lines to journalists about, I'm always surprised when one of our, you know, when one of our MSPs...
Listen, the more huddles, the better. I'm pro-huddle. Every day.
Absolutely.
He's doing a good job. He's doing a great job at these huddles.
I think it's magnificent. He should definitely, you know, and it is important that he keeps it up for, you know, transparency reasons. And we know that he's very big on transparency, apparently. So, but they are either being ignored or are incredibly bad at their job. I don't know.
I feel like we shouldn't be highlighting that.
I know.
You know, because otherwise he's just going to start saying yes and no, and not actually answering the questions, and then we'll just have nothing to write about. So,
well, okay, I'll change it to, it's been a good week for Humza's press officers. Sterling job and, you know, improving transparency and improving access to the First Minister, and long may it continue.
Excellent. I like the sound of that. That's good. Brilliant. Is that it? Do you have another one, or is it just...
No, that was it. Good week, bad week,
yeah.
Yeah, unlike me.
Good week.
Probably have to wrap up there. That's it for another week. Hope you enjoyed the latest Planet Holyrood. Thanks to Hannah and Dougie for their analysis. And please join us again next week.
It's important we look at the facts.
Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
Because I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.